Africa too, which is very important. Very earth-shaking events are happening daily. Things are really accelerating right now. As you were saying, Ken, these things aren't happening in isolation. There's a connection between the ongoing war in Ukraine, the serial overthrows of governments in Africa, and what's happening in Syria too. Carry on from here, Ken.
Okay. Well, first of all, concerning the war in Ukraine, at the present moment, the Ukrainian much-touted offensive to regain the territory it lost to Russia since in the special military operation that began on February 24th, 2022, has failed. It has failed miserably. I say it's a Ukrainian offensive, but it actually is a NATO offensive because this is a NATO proxy war that NATO has been preparing for some 30 years since the demise of the former Soviet Union. They have been, contrary to promises made to Mikhail Gorbachev in 1991, in which the West said and sent documents to say, in addition, that it would not expand 1 inch eastward of a reunited Germany. But of course, they lied, as always. And NATO expanded some 800 kilometers eastward and gobbled up 14 former Soviet republics and Warsaw Pact states. And in 2014, Victoria Nuland, she boasted about it later, spent some $5 billion orchestrating a coup by. Largely led by neo-Nazis who were in the Ukraine in the Maidan in February 2014. These neo-Nazis were descendants of the actual real Nazis, who including Bandera, Stepan Bandera, who was the leader of the organization of the United Ukrainian Nationalists. And that formation during the war allied itself with Hitler, and they formed the Waffen-SS, which was used to as concentration camp guards and to exterminate millions of Jews and Poles and Russians. Now their reincarnation in the Svoboda Party and the Right Sector—they got themselves thanks to Victoria Nuland. Her $5 billion of US taxpayer money, and not to mention $1 billion of Canadian taxpayer money, which most Canadians aren't even aware of, that went into the color revolution of 2004, known as the Orange Revolution, and the Maidan coup in 2014. And since 2014, that the junta that ran the government. With US approval and NATO approval, was given all kinds of money to create a de facto NATO army and NATO state, and they attacked the Russian-speaking people in the Donbass region and killed about 15,000 of them and forced about 1 million of them to flee as refugees into Russia. And that war continued despite the Minsk Accords because the Ukrainian leaders and also the German leader and the French leader, Hollande, and what was her name in Germany? I always forget her name.
Van der Leyen?
No.
Oh,
Her
before
chancellor.
Angela Merkel.
Angela Merkel. They both admitted later, along with Poroshenko, who was the leader in Ukraine of the junta, that they had lied and they had bargained in bad faith about the Minsk Accords, and they were just using this, the Minsk Accords, as to bide time, quote, in their words, to build up a NATO state and a de facto NATO army to attack the Russian-speaking people in the eastern part of Ukraine in the Donbass and to drive them, either kill them or drive them into Russia. And finally, they pushed Russia into a corner, despite Russia's many, many attempts to find a negotiated settlement to the conflict. Despite all that, they pushed Russia into the point where Russia responded with its special military operation and retook Crimea, easily and took 4 oblasts in eastern Ukraine, which are mainly populated by Russian-speaking people. And during the last year, the Russians were obliged to retreat somewhat, and the Ukrainians moved into some parts of those oblasts. But the much-touted Ukrainian offensive that was supposed to take place in the spring but took place in the summer has resulted in massive casualties and losses of soldiers and vehicles that were all supplied by the West, and did not even reach the Russian first line of defense. So it's been NATO's attempt to use the Ukrainian people as cannon fodder in its attempt to overthrow, defeat the Russian Federation, and do to the Russian Federation what it did to the Yugoslavian Federation back in the 90s, which was to defeat it, divide it up, and gobble up the pieces. That failed. And Mr. Putin has been trying for several months to find partners in the West that might come to a negotiated settlement, given the fact that the Ukrainian offensive produced no results except massive casualties on its own side. And they've been looking to try and end the conflict. In the West, there's been some noise about reevaluating its support of the Zelensky regime. But there haven't been any takers, especially in Canada here, where the prime minister and his foreign affairs minister won't even pick up the phone and talk to the Russians about what it might take to end the war in Ukraine. So we are in a situation where the NATO effort to use Ukraine in a proxy war against Russia has completely stalled. And on June 10th of this year in Vienna, there was an emergency gathering of representatives, peace activists from 38 countries, including Tamara Lorenz of the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace and the International League for Peace and Women's Peace and the International Women's League for Peace and Freedom. And they had a conference, and they issued a statement, and they called for a global mobilization to end the war in Ukraine to start in the first week of October this year. And so in Canada, our Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network has duly called for Canada-wide mobilizations on those dates. And we are planning to use the slogans, peace now, stop the war, stop NATO. Those are the main slogans. And we are building for this across Canada mobilization with a pre-mobilization webinar. It looks like it's going to be Tuesday, September 19th at 6 p.m., featuring Dmitry Lascaris. And Dmitry will be talking in his address about the new issues in this war, which are some of the new issues in this war. And the main ones for us is the use of cluster bombs, which are a banned weapon, and the use of depleted uranium as well. The United States has supplied Ukraine, the Zelensky government, with large amounts of cluster bombs, which are a banned weapon. There's a convention against them. They are prohibited weapons, I should say. And Trudeau issued the obligatory the condemnation of the U.S. of using these weapons once, and he hasn't said a word about it since. But these weapons, according to Dmitry, the use of these weapons by NATO in de facto and its proxy, the Ukrainian government, makes the war in Ukraine an illegal war. So no longer does the U.S. have the so-called moral high ground. The New York Times, the Washington Post, they all bemoaned the fact that the U.S. was doing this because it lost the, quote, moral high ground in this war. In my opinion, it never had it, but now they certainly haven't got it. And in addition to the cluster bombs, which which will have an effect on Ukrainian civilians for generations to come, because they are little bomblets that are shiny little objects, many of which do not explode on contact, and they are exploded decades later sometimes, as they are in Laos and Cambodia last month, by farmers and little children playing in the dirt. They see these shiny objects and pick them up and bang, they're dead, or they lose arms and legs. It's a horrible weapon, and that's why almost 120 countries, including Canada, have signed the convention to prohibit them. On top of that, the United Kingdom has sent depleted uranium ordnance to Ukraine to go along with its Challenger tanks, which it also sent to Ukraine. And that sending of depleted uranium ordnance, there is no convention, unfortunately, in the world, but we do have the experience of some 30 countries where the U.S. has used these weapons, including Syria, Iraq, and the former Yugoslavia. And they show that for decades after the use of these weapons, the dust that falls on the ground contaminates the area, and people, women have stillborn children or children with birth defects, and there's a huge spike in cancer rates in the places where this depleted uranium was used. So the Brits sent it along to go along with their tanks, and then it was one of those other provocations that in the continually escalating list of things that the West is giving to Ukraine. And when when Britain announced it was giving depleted uranium to Ukraine, the Russians, in return, announced that they were moving tactical nuclear weapons into Belarus, neighboring Belarus. And so that considerably upped the ante of the possibility for a nuclear confrontation in Ukraine or in Eastern Europe, which could involve the entire planet. The Russians responded once the depleted uranium was sent. It was sent to a place called Khmelnytsky and put in a warehouse. And one night when the wind was blowing from the east, a Russian drone, allegedly, bombed the warehouse, and the depleted uranium exploded in a huge massive cloud and was blown by the wind westward across Poland and Germany and towards the UK. When it crossed Germany, a German nuclear scientist did the readings, and he said the cloud was 20 kilometers wide and about 200 times the normal radioactive rate for several different elements, I guess, like strontium, niobium, cesium, tritium. I'm not sure of the elements. But so we are in a situation where the West continuously escalates this war. And, of course, the next escalation will be the supply of F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, which enormously increases the possibility of a war between Russia and NATO, because these planes are going to fly in from other countries surrounding Ukraine. And when they try and fly out again, are being chased by Russian MiGs into Poland or Romania or who knows, Latvia or Estonia or some other country that is supporting the NATO war. All hell can break loose between NATO and Russia over Article 5 of the NATO Constitution.
Well, of course, and that Article 5 is applying to more and more countries every day, it seems, with the Nordic countries falling in line, too. If you've just tuned in again, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking with Ken Stone in an extended version of our talk. Ken is from the Syria Support Movement International and Hamilton Coalition to Stop the Perpetual War, or to stop the war more properly. Well, Ken, now, can you reiterate this October gathering that is planned and the preparation or the what would you call it, this preparatorial webinar with Dmitry Lascaris?
Okay, so September 19th, 6 p.m. likely Eastern time. Dmitry will be talking about the global mobilization. He'll be talking about the prohibitive weapons being used in Ukraine, the cluster bombs, and also the depleted uranium. That's leading up to global mobilization to stop the war in Ukraine, first week in October. And the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network is sponsoring the mobilization in Canada. There'll be demonstrations from coast to coast. There'll be social media blitzes. There'll be a webinar planned. There's a planned webinar, we're hoping, involving Jacques Baud, who is a Swiss military man who is against the war in Ukraine. And there's also going to be a debate between Dmitry on October 2nd and Dominic Cardy, an MLA in New Brunswick, who is an ardent supporter of the war. He's agreed to a debate on October 2nd. So it should be an interesting week in Canada for anti-war activities. And I encourage everyone who wants to be involved to find it, to go to the website soon. It's not up yet. Go to the website notice at the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network and find a rally or a protest near you. And if there isn't one near you, well, organize a few friends and organize a protest. And then let us know, and we'll put it on the website. So there's room for people across the country to send a message to Justin Trudeau to stop refueling the war in Ukraine and to start using its diplomatic offices to find a negotiated solution to the conflict.
Yeah, well, remember, too, from small acorns, great oaks grow, and people often complain, where is the peace movement? And I recall it at its height prior to the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001 to no avail, and the large demos against invasions of Iraq in 2003, again, weren't heeded. Not all MPs may be fervently behind the war in Ukraine, as you describe this fellow whose name I've already forgotten, who's going to talk to Dmitry, or even more than he, our Deputy Minister Freeland. But I don't hear much opposition, none in fact, to the war coming from Parliament, from any side. Has that changed, or have I missed a growing peace movement within the parliament against the Ukraine war continuing and sucking the life out of that country and the money out of this one?
Regrettably, Chris, you haven't missed a thing. The Canadian parliament and all the opposition political parties are all on side with NATO. And this is a crying shame for Canadians, since two-thirds of Canadians, according to a recent opinion poll, oppose any further sending of funding or arms to Ukraine. And an increasing number of Canadians are, according to public opinion polls, are on side with us. They want to see a negotiated end to the conflict, but you wouldn't know it from the 338 people who are warming chairs in Ottawa.
Well, the Indian government landed a remote-controlled spaceship on the moon recently, last week. And I wonder if we would sit on the moon and look back, as the famous photograph did, at the Earth, and just watch the last 20 years or so, 25 years, of Western efforts to rein in any independent movements in other countries, or just attempts to retain their own sovereignty, and what it's entailed with the destruction of government and people after people after people after people this last quarter century. It seems that you and I, Ken, are members of a rogue, rampaging nation that, with some fellow mobsters, have taken it upon themselves to rule the world and destroy anything and anyone that stands in its way.
I couldn't agree more. And the main message that the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network is promulgating is that we are living right now. If we were sitting on the moon and looking back at the Earth, we would see two existential crises confronting humanity. One is the environmental crisis, and the other one is a growing health crisis that just won't go away. And in order to defeat these crises and save the planet and the people who live on it, is required international cooperation. And we don't have that. Instead, we have wars going on between NATO and the Russian Federation, and one-third of the world is supporting the United States and NATO, and two-thirds of the world is either not supporting it or supporting the Russian Federation. And so we are not getting any closer to the kind of cooperation we need and the kind of funding we need in order to mitigate against climate catastrophe and in order to mitigate against the growing health crisis in the world. So that is the terrible tragedy that we would see if we were sitting on the moon and looking at the Earth right now.
Yeah, it seems the military option is the foremost. The prime minister and deputy prime minister behind him are insisting that Canada will stand behind this project of regime change in Ukraine. And really what it is a program of regime change for Russia right up to the very end. And I noticed with some interest, you know, as far as West Asia goes, in the early days of this century, way back then, you remember that? When there was only one war going on at a time. People in that region accused the West of being the new crusaders. Well, I'm looking at our current defense minister's laurels and awards, one of which is the Order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem, a medal handed down by King Charles III, if you can stomach that for a bit, and in fact is a just that. It's a crusader order in the modern times.
Well, the Israel is in fact a permanent military base. It's a forward projection of U.S. power in the Middle East, and that's how Canada regards it and supports it. That's why Canada and the EU support it. It's because it is the West attempting to penetrate, recolonize, and redraw the boundaries of the Middle East in its own favor. And that's what the war in Syria is all about. That was what the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya were all about, Somalia too. And it's all backfired. And the result has been a complete change in the balance of power in the world, with Russia and China as rising powers and the U.S. as a declining power, no longer the sole superpower in a unipolar world. And vast changes are taking place quickly, as you pointed out, in Africa, as the neo-colonies of France in Central and West Africa are trying to shake off the imperial domination of France and trying to get the benefit of their economies for their own people. Well, they, you know, of course, the U.S. and Canada and the EU don't like this at all, because it threatens the West's control over the global South. But Russia and China are all in favor of it. And that's why I say that there is a balance of power change in the world. And I think we're going to see more and more of it as more countries join BRICS. And if they can put together a basket of currencies to replace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of most of the countries of the world, we are going to see a quick implosion of U.S. imperial power.
Yeah, and we're talking about desperation. The desperation of Macron is not his alone. America is also behind an invasion using as a cat's paw the organization ECOWAS, whose member states seem to be diminishing by the day, and what remain are terrified of their own populations, mounting a military expedition into Niger to restore the previous unloved leader or king, I guess you might call him. It's certainly not a democratic situation right there, as the recent election will testify. Well, fascinating times to be sure, Ken. Thanks a lot for coming and speaking, and especially in an extra long version here. Before we go, Ken, can you allow our listeners to get direction to find you guys over at the Hamilton Coalition and anywhere else you'd like to direct them?
Okay, thanks, Chris. People who are interested in our work and the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War can go to our website, which is hcsw.ca, or if you prefer, you can type in the whole thing, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca. We also have a Facebook page and a presence on Twitter. The organizer, the overall umbrella organization organizing the Canadian effort in the global mobilization to end the war in Ukraine, it's called the Canada-Wide Peace and Justice Network. I'm a coordinating committee member of that. And its website is, if you just Google Canada-Wide Peace and Justice Network, you'll get the website. And we're in the process of drafting the statement for the first week in October, and all the graphics and all the social media stuff. So I would give it a week or so, and all the stuff should probably be there.
Well, again, it's hcsw.ca. Well, thanks a lot, Ken, for coming on again, eh?
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime, Chris.
And I'll refer you to HCSW, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca. Thanks again. Until the next time, eh, Ken? Peace.
You bet. Peace now.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio. A century of news every Thursday and Saturday.